Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
Good afternoon to you on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and great day to you wherever, and oh, by the way, whenever you may be listening. My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studios of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and a rather long walk, but a really short flight on the USS Enterprise at warp speed up to Charleston, South Carolina. His name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall with South Carolina Federal Credit Union. Hey, Troy, how you doing?
I am doing wonderful. And you cannot believe the number of things that have happened in history today, September the 25th.
Do tell.
Well, most of it is all war-related. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, that's
okay. A lot of war, a lot of crime stuff, you know, so I was just like looking down through there. American Revolution, Ethan Allen is captured in 1775. The Confederate president visits General Hood in Georgia in 1864, part of the Civil War. Eisenhower and Khrushchev met for talks in 1959. And, of course, speaking of another war, Michael Douglas was born in 1944. He started War of the Roses.
War of the Roses.
Put that out there. Yeah. So. See, there you go. I brought some education, because I know we're going to talk about education. I brought some education to today's
session. And you brought some intelligence to this show, which we always desperately need on this particular program. Today we are talking about a little bit about Breaking Bad. Now, Troy is a PhD candidate and spends much of his free time studying to take over the world of leadership and management and global leadership. I had never seen this show on regular TV, Troy. You know what I mean by regular TV, where you sit down on the couch and you turn on the TV. I found it on Netflix. And what is a little ironic is I found it quite by accident. When you're on the iPad, sometimes you'll touch something and you don't really mean to. And I never really paid any attention to it, but I read the synopsis. It's a chemistry teacher that has been diagnosed with terminal cancer, lung cancer, and to provide for his family, decides to start cooking crystal meth with a former student. And I thought, that's kind of, I'll give it a shot. And I mean, just a few minutes into the show, I was hooked. I binge watched, I think, the whole first season over a couple days and then through all the different seasons. And I actually did something I've never done before. I went out on the internet and watched the episodes before they were really available, like on DVD and stuff like that. I'm convinced it's the best show in the history of American television. And the way I think it relates to banks and credit unions is that, again, I kind of found it in a non-traditional format. I guess Netflix now is traditional, but again, it wasn't that ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS type of stuff that we used to have. Mm-hmm. You and I kind of grew up with, and I think a lot of banks and credit unions are going to be discovered that way. People jumping out on mobile sites and applying for loans on their smartphones, and I just think there's a lot of similarities that, you know, every time they brought in a new character, every time they brought in something new to this show, it simply added to the overall value of the performance. It didn't take away, and I think that's going to be one of the challenges going forward. In a show like this, they're taking away and removing critical parts of the narrative. You know, people get killed, people die, people move on, and I think that's kind of the future of banking. We're going to have to take some things away, I believe, for banks and credit unions to survive, like the square footage of branches that a lot of brands have out there, and add things. I'll never forget Dinah Dykstra being on this show 3 years ago now, talking about how no members were really clamoring for internet banking and bill pay. They didn't realize they needed them yet, and I think that's always one of the most challenging things for a bank or a credit union, to kind of figure out what people want, even if they're not necessarily aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, very much staying in tune with what is actually happening, because so much of what occurs is it's understanding the peripheral so that you can bring it into focus, and not being distracted by the peripheral when it doesn't need to come into focus. And basically, you think of yourself as you're driving down a highway, and the things that you see on the side of the road, you have to make instantaneous decisions. Do I pay attention to that? Like, is it a car that's coming from a road, and are they really going to stop or not? You have to make an instantaneous decision whether you're going to react to it or whether you're simply going to pass it by and trust that it's going to happen the way it does. And that's the difference between when sometimes we're trying to think strategically, we forget to adopt scenarios that help us determine and assess whether that peripheral item is actually really going to come into the front for us, because we don't recognize that it's actually moving closer and closer to the front because we didn't pay that much attention to it as we were passing by it. So I think that is where the key comes in for organizations to actually be better prepared for these types of changes that we're going to see.
Well, and I agree with you, and that's what we're going to do today. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to jump in the car. I'll let Troy drive. I'll sit in the passenger seat, and we're going to go down the road into the future and look at the future of banking 2014 and beyond. So, Troy, if you'll hand me that Wild Cherry 8-track tape, we'll get it going right after this.
You got it.
I never had no problems because of the PG nature of the show. We have to edit the song right there. But hey, listen, Troy, my first future trend in retail banking has to do with a subject I know is near and dear to your heart. It has to do, I believe, that chief executives and chief operating officers and chief financial officers at banks and credit unions are going to start asking people to prove that there is a demonstrable return on social media. And kind of help us with this conversation, we're bringing on our social media guru, advisor to the stars. His name is Stephen Yancey from GTE Financial. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
That title never gets old for some reason. I love
it
every time you say
no.
It. The guru.
And I can't believe it. The studio audience is actually paying attention today. I always tell people the studio audience are people that flunked out of the subway management training program, but they're actually quite on the ball. Stephen, you're the gentleman that's in charge of the social media vibe down at GTE Financial, a big financial brand down in Tampa, Florida.
Yes.
Now, you tell me, because honestly, I'm asking this question. I think people are going to want to be able to enumerate, hey, this is what we got for our investment in social media. A, is it going to be possible? I just kind of want to know what your thoughts are on that subject.
You know, people ask this question all the time, and it's not just a question that's being asked in financial brands. It's the question that comes up all the time in just the social world in general, is how do you show ROI when it comes to social media? And my first response to that question always is, how can you afford not to have a great social media platform and plan? That really is my first response always. Troy, I know that you're big into social media as well, and would you agree with me with that statement?
Absolutely, and I think that in this particular conversation, there's a distinction between the involvement in social media and placing ads through social media and how you can determine your value based on the ads that you place. So I think you're right. So for me, social media is about the conversation, make sure there is conversation, dialogue. We're participating in dialogue. And I wrote an article for CU Insight saying, would you put a muzzle on your tellers? And it's for this exact same reason, because I'm thinking like, what? Well, you don't let the tellers talk when the people come inside your financial institution? What, they're not allowed to say anything? That's what would be happening if you weren't in social media. You'd be putting the muzzle on yourself. Like, that's goofy.
It seems really true, too. And, you know, I think people people that aren't inside and connected with the social world, like you may be sitting there listening to this podcast right now saying, well, I need to see some numbers. I need to see some proof. And there's plenty of ways that you can test your social media to see if it's performing to your standards or not. I mean, there's so many different metrics you can look at inside of Facebook or through – just we could go on and on and on. I don't want to bore you guys with all the details. I mean, you can look at how just how people interact with your brand in general. I mean, it takes them about 7 seconds to digest any social messages you put out there. So you know that for those 7 seconds that that person is directly connected to your brand. You know, I mean, you could look at how many clicks you're getting through. You know, if you're a believer in pay-per-click advertising through the web, and you look at how much you're paying every time you get a click on one of your paid Google ads or whatever it is, whatever service you go through. I mean, how many clicks are you getting through social media? You know, how many people are actually interacting with your brand? So many ways to tell, but I like to just get rid of that question altogether and just stick with that initial topic, which is if you're not going to do social, I promise you your competition is going to do it, and they're going to do it better than you, and they're going to outshine what you're doing online.
And that's something you really can't afford to happen. And I agree with you, and that's why I'm saying it. I think it's one of those things that – and I always worry about this because once I see it pop up in an article or in a news story, I can imagine these guys that run around doing strategic planning, you know, after the rubber chicken dinner asking the president of a bank or a credit union, so how are you measuring ROI on social media? And I honestly don't know that you can say this – doing this earned us this exact many dollars. I just don't think – It's possible. I agree with your premise. How can you afford not to? To me, that's the best way to answer that question.
And I think that, you know, that it kind of goes to the difference. You know, we had a podcast a while ago where we were just talking about just social in general and the credit unions that are doing it and the credit unions that aren't doing it. And I think it kind of comes down to that, is that people want to see ROI. And like I said last time, is, you know, social is a completely different kind of marketing tool. You know, it's still a very important marketing tool, but it's not like any other. And when we sit here and we try to compare it to the other ones, we're always going to fail. If you're putting the same message on your billboards that you're putting on your social media, you're not doing it right. So I think when you go in, if you're sitting there right now debating if you should be doing social media, and you're starting with the question of how am I going to show ROI, then I think you're kind of in a bad spot to even start.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And you know, I don't want to embarrass you, Stephen, but Troy, I don't know if you know this or not, but believe it or not, well, you believe it, Stephen had the highest rated show in the month of August on our fine program. So how about
wow.
that? Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
He's the guru. Hey,
yeah. I think that's really cool, and you know, I think really what that shows is there's so many credit unions that want to learn how to do social media, and I think they see the importance, but like I said, I think even what you guys are starting to bring up with the, you know, ROI, and ROI I think makes things so cloudy. You know, we have proof here, and we've done, you know, one thing that we do is, you know, when we have new member applications or any kind of new loans, we always ask, you know, what brought you in, you know, just like with billboards or TV, and one of ours, of course, is social media now too, and we're actually seeing some traction with people that have come in through social media, either promotions or just the pages and channels in general. So that's really cool to see that it's having an impact. So there are ways, like I say, don't give up on the fact either, because it's not that it's not measurable. It's definitely measurable, and there's definitely a way to see a return on your investment. It's just not going to be as clear cut as you would find with other sources.
Exactly. It would be like taking a finely woven fabric and trying to pull all the strands apart without breaking one of them. Because, again, going back to your billboard example, there is no way that you can qualify how much business you did as a result of that billboard unless the controlled environment
Absolutely right.
is completely absent of any other factor that's either mediating or moderating it. And so
right.
that's the problem, is that you can't put that exact number to it. And the best way, if you're going to focus on an ROI, or if you have to focus on a financial model, because, and Stephen, I really appreciate it when you say change the question, you know, really get to the heart of it, because I'm kind of like that too, very creative in that regard. But there are some people that just dig their heels in it. So we have have to help them say, well, what are you going to do? And I think we go back to your original portion of the conversation, and we say, measure it by number of impressions. What is your cost for impression, your cost for click? You know, manage it based on what is the type of feedback that you are receiving it regarding the interactions of your consumers who are involved with you in social media. Try to make a connection in that regard because it becomes like an awareness portion of a campaign, and it's not always directly attributed to the dollars and cents that were earned.
And I think that social really, what it does, I think it really highlights the best parts of your marketing efforts. I mean, you know, you can definitely spotlight any kind of artwork that you've done, like through for billboards. You know, you'd have that there. I mean, we talked last time about, you know, people having fears of negative feedback, you know, on their social pages, and we know, like we said last time, what a great way to spin that into it's a way
something
that you
positive.
Show how you helped a member. You know, there's so many positives that come with social, and I think we're seeing some progress in the credit union field, but I think we've got a long way to go. And I'm glad we brought up ROIs. We didn't talk about it last time, and I'm glad that we're kind of delving into that topic.
Well, you
have to have a specific stomach you have to have a specific stomach in order to take the negative comments that come out, because your initial reaction is to defend everything that's ever said, you know, negatively about you. Here's my theory on this. Most of the people who write the negative stuff, their friends know who they are. And other people who don't know them aren't listening to them anyway. So, you know, it's not relevant unless you have, in fact, really screwed up. If you have, then you would fix it, and it would be more far-ranging than two people. So, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over two people who wrote something negative because they had a terrible experience. I'm thinking, like, you know, literally, if I wrote down every negative experience I had when I came in contact with people in the retail world, I could fill a book. And it just happens.
Right.
So you go on with it. So you can't overcompensate for the fact that, oh, my gosh, somebody said that they had a terrible experience with the teller. Well, okay, we'll go back and fix that if they want to talk to me one-on-one, and we'll take care of it. But, you know, it's goofy.
Well, listen, Stephen, you, like I said, you're going to be a recurring guest and advisor to the show. You are our social media guru, go-to guy. I want to wish you nothing but continued success down at Tampa at GT Financial. And thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. And we'll talk again soon, okay?
Yeah.
All right,
have a good day, Stephen.
Take care. Take care, buddy. All right, Troy, how about you now? Trends in banking, retail banking. What's one for you?
Well, in the list that we had, so just in fair to everybody else so that they will have an idea what these trends are, one of them is multi-channel impact on mobile online, and it is about the online banking, you know, continuing to grow. Another one is making money from mobile, and that is where banks are charging to make deposits via mobile. Another one is the smaller branches, meaning that, you know, we'll still need branches, but there will be different things done in those particular branches. You talked about the demanding the ROI from the online social. Another one is selective investments in branch technology, and those are the five. So for me, I have selected making money from mobile, and I'm not 100% clear that this trend is going to last because I do not believe that the consumers will stand for it. And I think it's going to go back to exactly a pre-show discussion that we had regarding charging for bill pay. There were institutions that wanted to charge for bill pay when it first came out, and they were not getting an adoption rate for it. And when they packaged it as part of the experience in with the entire account, then all of a sudden it took on a whole new life of its own. I think it's just that these are some large banks, and in this particular article, it's BB&T and U.S. Bank. They charge 50 cents per check for mobile check deposit, but I don't think that trend's going to last.
I don't think so either, though. I do think that, you know, Siri with the iPhone and all that stuff is just the beginning. I think mobile banking is going to evolve to a place where, you know, Troy, you're driving down the road and, you know, you say, bring up my internet banking, transfer, you know, $5,000 from my savings to my checking. I think it's going to become much more seamless, much more user friendly, but I agree with you. If I have to pay 50 cents to snap a picture of my check with my smartphone, I'll just, next time I'm in the area, I'll just go down to the old brick and mortar branch and go to the drive through.
Well, and I'm going to tell you why. And I'll tell you why it's not going to happen for two reasons. One is because they tried this program. Folks who wanted to assess fee, when I say they, that group, they tried to do it with your debit card. You may not remember this, but because I've been in the financial market for 36 years, I kind of remember somewhere along the trend, they wanted to charge us 35 cents every time you did a debit transaction at a merchant. And like, well, people just decided, well, we'll just use this as credit. And all of a sudden, their fees were driven up by the credit. They took the fee back away. So they decided to not do the fee. So that is one thing. The other thing that's going to happen is this trend of people-to-people money, the money that's going to transfer from person to person. And you're going to be able to even reduce your costs in your home banking and your bill pay program, because there won't be checks cut. They go from person to person. They're actually going to work it electronically, transfer person to person, and it will be through a card to card. A debit card to debit card transaction is one of the ways I'm seeing the trends doing it. So that's another reason why this will definitely not happen, because people will not be using checks as much as we think they are using them. So.
And, of course, with the mobile and everything else, it gets to one of my other ones, the whole limiting the reliance on the actual physical branch. I think we're going to get to a point where the branches resemble more of an expanded kiosk on steroids. I think we're going to have fewer people working in the branches. I think they're going to be more specialized people. I think there's still going to be a huge need for contact center personnel that are interacting with members and customers via chat and video conference. And I think the training, the way that we train people is going to need to be very, very different, more effective, and more efficient. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk to Amy Rapp of Virtual Core and ask her what she thinks about the future of training at the bank or at the credit union when we don't have those boardrooms at the branches anymore to hang out in. And we'll do it all right after this.
Man, when I'm listening to The Power of Performance, I just can't decide who's hotter, Jason or Troy.
Well, you can tell by the way I use my voice, I'm a woman, man. No time to talk. You need love.
It is a very, very complicated discussion. Who is hotter, Jason or Troy? You're listening to The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more where the talk is hot, but the hosts are
hotter? Sizzling,
so much
fire.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, we're happy to have you. So, Amy, here is talking about future trends in banking. I think we're going to have a lot fewer 8 a.m. Training sessions at the branch with the donuts and the coffee and the granola bars. Where do you see the webinars and online training going over the next several years in banking?
Well, thank you for asking me. Given that I just started my own company called virtualcore.com, it's kind of where I'm moving, and I think that this is where a lot of people are going to be moving, not just at the credit union level, but just doing business all together. I think we're going to, first we have to be sensitive to the members that are traditionally invested to a brick-and-mortar situation. We've got folks that are maybe mid-50s on up that are still not comfortable with using mobile types of applications. And so I think that it's going to take leadership at the credit union and bank level to acknowledge that maybe our member interfacing youth, usually who are at the beginning part of their career, are probably going to be at the teller line if we're dealing with the brick and mortar and are quickly moving over towards transacting on their own levels through social applications, that they may be dealing with folks who are not comfortable or will ever be comfortable at this particular phase with this year and next year and even maybe into the following year after. So I think it's going to take leadership at the branch level to be able to be sensitive to that potential social disconnect as a start. And therefore, we need to, because we don't want to turn members away, we don't want to turn them off because we start to push them into this arena when maybe they'll never be able to move to that level. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Troy?
Well, for me, definitely, I think there is a balance between the members that are presently within the within your organization and the new ones who are coming in. And that isn't uncommon, you know, from years gone by. What is different today and why the balancing act is a little more challenging is twofold. One, there are up to five generations available today to be involved in the retail world or to be involved in those experiences, where in prior times you may have had three generations working, and simply because the fourth generation was there but was very silent. Now we see that it's much different in there. I think the challenge will be for the tipping point is to decide at what point will you have to change what you're doing because the new generation is actually demanding that particular change. The other thing that's keeping and what's really also happening today that's keeping some of this from accelerating is still the dominance of baby boomers. Really, about 5-10 years ago, when we thought that the baby boomers would be out and Gen Y would be in, everybody forgot all about Jason and Gen X. I mean, they just simply wrote him away. But, you know, they all thought that Gen Y would be the big deal. Well, the problem is that the baby boomers is still a force to be reckoned with. They have not left the workforce like people thought. And even if they do leave the workforce, they are still controlling all the wealth. They haven't transferred it over yet. So.
Right. Now, I just want to bring up a couple other points here. Getting back to the earlier discussion with Steve on how do you quantify the ROI, I think how you quantify it is you have increased relationships that you are managing, because clearly that's what's going to be driving. If you have social media that's an effective social media campaign, and you might want to get into your click per web and all that. But I think if you have an increased relationships that are doing business, that's how you start to quantify it. So I don't want to lose that point, because relationship management is really what it's all about. We don't want to get desensitized and just trying to deal with the level of managing the social media, trying to fit it into the model of people who want to write it down and put it down at the end of their year on their ROI. We have to look at how we're increasing our relationship development, and I think that's a good place to start. Secondly, another interesting model that I think is going to continue to move forward is we're going to have a lot of virtual types of branches. ING was a very successful model. They just were sold over to Capital One. And I think ING was the beginning part of establishing a way for people to work in the financial transaction world without feeling that they had to go into a brick and mortar. And I think we need to look at how successful ING was. They have just been they're just a well-capitalized organization. Again, now Capital One has received them. But they were able to bust the mold out of that brick-and-mortar mindset. They did have a few offices, few locations for their regional headquarters and so on and so forth. But I think that got people into the momentum of working without going into a brick-and-mortar that were people in the baby boomer group.
Well,
and
listen,
so,
Amy, I'm absolutely looking forward to continuing this conversation with you. But believe it or not, we're down to about 90 seconds left on this show. If people want to find out more about Virtual Core, what's the best way to do it?
Just go to virtualcore.com. We're going to be bringing the world through webinars, workshop, extension of staff, and we've got a lot more partnerships that we're developing, and we're up and running. So thanks for having me on the show, fellas.
Hey,
no
thank
problem.
You.
So it's Virtual Core, VirtualCore.com?
CORPS, like as in a core of experts.
Got it.
.com.
Hey, listen, speaking of partnerships, Eloquent Online is going to be talking with Virtual Core about some mutually beneficial opportunities, so you'll definitely be hearing from Amy again. Hey, Amy, you have a great, great time out there in the great state of Montana, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Thanks. Nice
All right.
to meet you, Tony. Great day.
Troy.
Troy, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. No problem, Sarah. I mean, Amy.
Hey,
we have such a good time
before,
on this show, don't we?
Before we get out of here, if you're listening live, I forgot to mention at the top of the show is brought to you by our good buddies at Marquee. As you go confidently into the future, make sure you go Marquee.com, well known for their CRM and MSIF solutions. They are also one of the fastest growing creative agencies in the country. I was at their print shop 2 weeks ago, and it was beautiful. Hey, Troy, for the rest of us, we're into a few seconds of bonus time here. This is one of those subjects, when you talk about the future of banking, it's probably going to require a second show to do it. So I'm looking forward to talking with you about it.
Well, if we're
going to
talk about the
week.
Future of banking, it might take several shows since it will always be in the future.
Absolutely will be. Hey, listen, I want to thank Stephen Yancey for jumping on from GTE Financial. I want to thank Amy Rapp from Virtual Core. And I want to thank all of you for listening. If it's Wednesday, it's the Power Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? Just like a band, it takes planning, it takes strategic thinking, and of course, executing that tactical game plan each and every day. Until next week, my name is Jason Dias. His name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall. Troy, you have a great week out there in the beautiful city of Charleston, South Carolina, where even when it rains,
the sun still shines.
And everybody else will talk to you next Wednesday. Bye-bye.